Very well. You know what to do. You have had a good look at him. There must be no mistakes.
The six men gathered around Nimrud, nodded silently. There would be no mistakes because they had come to fear Nimrud greatly and would not risk his disappointment. Though none of them had much stomach for what was about to take place.
Then disperse carefully. I will await you here. Remember the signal and look sharp. I do not need to remind you that it is a most dangerous game we are playing. Most dangerous. Now go and be ready.
The six men, the best chosen from among the Order of Temple Guards, faded away, their dark clothing melding with the green leaves and deep shadows of Pelgrim Forest. Nimrud's cruel features creased into a malicious grin.
My revenge. Now it begins. At long last, it begins!
The inner ward yard bustled with activity as the king assembled his family and friends. Bria and the princesses would ride to the field in a gaily festooned coach. Quentin and his son would lead the procession on horseback, followed by Derwin and Toli, and as many of the noble visitors as had not already left for the field. Esme, however, would not be among them. When all was ready, the armorer came hurrying up with two squires at either elbow. One lad carried the king's shield, burnished bright as a mirror. The other carried, on a long satin pillow, the king's sword, Jalakir, the Shining One. The armorer knelt and offered the king his weapons. Quentin nodded, and the squires helped their master fasten the great sword in place, and then handed up the shield, which the king slung over his shoulder. Word of the Shining Sword had long ago spread far and wide throughout the land. There was not a peasant anywhere who had not heard of its forging in the lost mountain mines of the Araga out of the fabled glowing ore, Lanthanil. Far beyond the borders of Mensendor, tales of the Shining One were told, and of the mighty priest king who had wielded the blessed weapon against unstoppable odds and saved the world. Those who looked upon him now believed those stories more fervently than ever, because he appeared so strong and fearless. Quentin mounted Blazer, and the milk-white stallion danced sideways, anxious to be off. The king raised a gloved hand, the inner ward gates were opened wide, and the parade began. They passed into the outer ward and then through the gatehouse, over the huge drawbridge, and down the ramp into the city. The happy people fell into place behind the procession as it passed, and all made their way to the field. Young Garen, his heart fluttering within him like a captive bird, gawked openly at all around him, feeling proud and important. This day the hunt wore a different look. Nothing appeared the same as he remembered it. All had changed, becoming more colorful, more exciting, more thrilling than ever before. For this day, he would ride with the hunt. He swiveled in his saddle and threw a conspiratorial glance back at Toli, who rode behind him. Toli saw the look and answered it with a wink. Garen turned his eyes to the sights around him. Jugglers tossed knives and hoops high into the air and caught them deftly. A man with a trained bear on a chain made it stand on its head. Acrobats tumbled in through one another, spinning into the air. Some boys had made a pair of stilts from the limbs of trees and were trying to master the art of walking on them. Vendors hawked their trinkets, fancy ribbons, jewelry, and tiny lacquered boxes. The world was alive with sound and color. The parade entered the field itself, and Garen turned his eyes to the competition. Ranged around the long rectangle of the field were tents and small pavilions, each with a standard before the entrance bearing the banner of the Lord or Knight within. Some of the riders were outside their tents, seeing to the last-minute details of tack or weapons. Hunting hounds lay on the grass waiting for the chase to begin, or strained at their leashes as they sensed the moment of their release drawing near. Garen gazed among the pavilions, reading the devices and looking for those that he knew. There was the green oak on a barred field of azure and gold that was Sir Grenfell. The boar and spear on scarlet belonged to Lord Bosset, and the silver lance and shield on checkered black and white was the blazon of Sir Hendrick of Bellaby. There were more that he did not know, hearts and hounds, mailed fists and morions, poniards and praying birds, but he did not see the two he hoped most to see, the black hawk on crimson, and the grey gauntlet clutching crossed mace and hail.
Where is Thedo, father? And Ronsard? I dare not see them.
They will be here before the hunt is through. Vado sent word that he will arrive tomorrow and Ronsard likewise. They will not miss the hunt. Do not worry. Your friends will come.
They arrived at the king's pavilion and dismounted. The ascending rows of banks were already filled to overflowing, and more people were crowding in. In the very front row, however, were chairs set up behind a banister for the royal family and their entourage. The queen took her place and the princesses beside her, smiling and waving to all who greeted her. The king, instantly surrounded by well-wishers, slowly made his way to his chair, where he remained standing, and signaled the herald. The clarion call summoned the riders, who began filing onto the field, arranging themselves in ranks before the king's pavilion. When all were ready, the king nodded to a man with a white leather baldric, from which dangled a hunting horn. The man was the marshal of the hunt. He led his bay horse to the front of the assembled ranks. Quentin looked over the gathered crowd.
Do you one and all pledge your oath to abide the laws of the king's hunt? Well said. Let the hunt begin.
The marshal raised the horn to his lips. As they were mounted and making ready to gallop off, Quentin looked to his side and saw his son beaming at him, his young face shining with anticipation.
What is this?
I am riding too, father. That is your surprise.
Before Quentin could speak, Tolly, sitting next to the prince, spoke up.
We have been practicing for weeks, my lord. Your son has become a fine horseman.
Is it true?
If you could see the bruises I have endured, you would know the truth of it.
Quentin did not know what to say. He glanced to Bria, who was attending the scene from her seat with a worried look on her face. Quentin scratched his jaw and seemed about to overrule the enterprise. He looked to Tolly.
Do you think it wise?
Sire, I would not allow it if I thought he would be in danger. He can handle himself and his mount, never fear. And I will ride with him just to make sure. I will not allow him away from me for an instant.
Quentin nodded, his eyes on the boy. The intense hope the youngster carried within him burned out of his eyes like a flame. How could he be denied?
As you will.
Quentin couldn't help but to break into a grin when he saw how much his approval meant to the lad.
You shall ride, and I hope you find the biggest trophy.
For you, father. I want to find one for you.
Tolly, watch after him. And you, young sir, do as Tolly tells you.
They made their way among the other riders to the end of the field. The king in the lead, with Derwin on one side and Prince Garin and Tolly on the other. When they were in position, the king raised his hand.
To the hunt!
All at once, the horses leapt away, thundering off across the plain toward Pelgrim Forest.
What are you waiting for?
Garin hesitated at the edge of the wood.
Away! Fly!
The youngster snapped the reins, and Tarki dashed away, Tolly right behind him.
He's growing up, sire.
Too fast, I sometimes think. Look at him go.
He reminds me of another young man I met. Could it be that long ago? He also had a brown mare, as I remember.
But he did not ride that well, as I remember.
So it is. But he had the will to try, and a stout heart in his young frame.
Stubborn, you mean? How we have changed, old friend.
Yes, changed a little, but still very much the same. Come along. Let us see how the young master fares. Keep up if you can. Yaha!
Is that any way to speak to your king, you grizzled old hermit? Ha!
It is such a lovely day, m'lady. Do you not wish to join the others at the festival?
Chloe came quietly up behind Esme as she gazed unseeing out upon the plain, a blossom with scores of colored tents.
See? The hunt has already begun.
They watched the line of horses and riders galloping in a long, sinuous wave over the plain of Ascalon.
You may go, Chloe, if you like. I think I will remain.
Oh, do come, m'lady. You would enjoy it. You would, I know.
To please you, very well, I will go.
As the day was gentle, they decided to walk, making their way through the empty streets to the festival field. Esme's dark mood of the night before had returned with the morning. And though she tried to master it, she found it engulfed her more securely than she guessed. For try as she might, she could not banish it from her. So, with no hope of ridding herself of it, and lacking the immediate strength to fight it, she merely gave herself over to the despair she felt, and let it tug her along where it would.
What am I to do? What am I to do?
Esme had, with the death of her husband, inherited vast holdings of lands. Several small villages were under her protection, as well as a castle and a summer estate, each with a full complement of stewards, overseers, and servants. Her treasury was one of the largest in Elsinore, but all this she would have given up gladly, if only it would have offered her a glimmer of hope for happiness.
Do not frown so, my lady.
What?
Esme pulled herself out of her gloomy thoughts.
Promise me you will try to enjoy the occasion.
I shall try. I know it is not seemly for a lady to scowl like a haggard. Oh, Chloe, what am I going to do?
Once at the festival site, they made their way among the yellow and white-striped pavilions. They walked toward the king's pavilion, pausing to watch acrobats and jugglers, or to sample the treats of the vendors.
Lady Esme! It's Lady Esme!
Esme turned to see the two little princesses running to her.
We are so glad you came! Oh, there is so much to see!
Come with us!
Do you want to watch us in a game?
Oh, please, you must!
I would love to.
The girls were off again, quick as grasshoppers, darting toward a large ring of people gathered around a game of skittles.
I am glad you changed your mind, Esme.
Bria fell into step beside her. Esme dropped her eyes to her feet.
It was Chloe's idea.
Bria heard the undertone of despair in her voice.
I must have gabbled like a fishwife last night.
What is a little gabbling between friends? I welcome your confidence. If you care to talk, I will listen.
Esme did not speak again for a moment. The two women walked together in silence.
It is strange, is it not?
What is?
Life. Only yesterday we had so much before us, so many bright hopes for the future, so many dreams, so much joy. Those were good days.
And will be again.
For others, perhaps. But not for me. It seems my fate was cast from the beginning. I was never...
All were born for happiness, Esme. But you have seen much of pain and trouble, and it will take time to heal those inner wounds. You must not expect them to disappear in an evening.
I thought by coming here it would be different. But I have brought my trouble with me.
Then we shall do whatever can be done to free you. And you must also help.
I will try, Bria. I will try for your sake.
Not for me, dear friend. For yourself.
The hunt moved through the thick-grown trails of Pelgrim Forest. In a clearing through which coursed a shining stream, Quentin and Derwin stopped to allow their horses to drink.
Tired so soon?
I should return to the festival. My presence there will be required to judge the games. It is a good hunt, eh?
So it is. I do not remember one better. But you go on. I will remain a little. I would like to see the young prince ride. It is a joy to watch him. I shall try to find them.
Quentin turned Blazer and started across the meadow. He waved to Derwin and galloped away. Derwin struck off for the far side of the clearing, where a trail entered the wood. He knew the forest well, and had a hunch where he might find Tully and Garen, for he had seen them pushing a southerly course just before he and the king had entered the meadow.
How long has it been since I have lived in the forest? Too long. I've forgotten how peaceful it is, and how fragrant and beautiful. Perhaps I should leave the castle and move back to my old home. Perhaps. But I am content to be where the king wants me. Yes, I am content.
Those and other thoughts occupied his mind as he rode along the leaf-laden byways of the forest. The green shadows were cool, and low sunlight struck through open patches in the leafy canopy, dappling the path with dancing light. Derwin savored the solitude of the wood and felt his heart soar like a hawk on an upward draft. Derwin could not discern the source of the yell, but it seemed to come from somewhere very close at hand.
Yeah!
He spurred his steed forward, heedless of the branches reaching out for him.
Young sire, get back!
He saw a movement through the trees just ahead. The next instant, he was through the trees and pounding into a wider place in the trail. There before him, he saw Tully and Prince Garon on horseback, with three men in dark clothing around them. The men had short swords and were circling the riders, trying to get at them. Only Riv's flashing hooves kept these assailants at bay.
Garen! Tully!
Without thinking, Derwin dashed forward. The men heard the shout and turned to see a new threat bearing down on them. The circle broke as one of the foe turned to meet the hermit. Before the man could raise his sword, Tully whirled Riv, and the warhorse's shoulder knocked the man to the ground. The attacker's two companions bolted and ran, melding back into the forest. The man on the ground looked up, fear twisting his begrimed features. The man leapt to his feet as he made for the trail edge. He dove into the break and was gone.
Who were they?
I do not know. We merely stopped here to choose a direction. They were on us in an instant.
Are you sound, young master?
Prince Garen nodded slowly. His eyes showed white all around.
What do you think they wanted?
Tully squinted his eyes in the direction of the fleeing assailants.
That I mean to find out.
Tully glanced from the prince to Derwin quickly.
Stay with Derwin, young sir. He will look after you. I will be but a moment.
The prince seemed about to protest, but shut his mouth and obeyed.
Be careful, Tully. You have no weapons.
Return to the field at once. I will meet you there directly.
With that, he urged Riv forward into the undergrowth after the mysterious men.
Some wickedness is afoot. I feel it. There is evil close about.
Prince Garen peered at the hermit closely. The boy set his jaw and stared ahead grimly. The act reminded Derwin of another who had faced trouble with the same silent resolve. How very like his father the young prince was. They were riding back along the trail the way Tully and the prince had come, when Derwin put out a hand and they stopped.
Listen!
Both cocked their heads to one side.
Perhaps Tully is returning.
Derwin felt the darkness around him increase. He could almost see it as a presence, feel its desperate strength. It occurred to him that he had encountered such a malignant force before, and in exactly the same way, a long time ago.
We must run for it.
The two horses leapt away. They charged along the winding forest path toward the safety of the open plain. They had not run far before they met two men in the path ahead, wearing the same dark clothing as the others they had encountered. The men waved swords in front of the horses. The horses stopped and turned. Derwin pulled his mount around and Garen did the same, but as they made to retreat, two more ruffians stepped out onto the path behind them.
There!
Derwin pointed into the brush. He hesitated and allowed the prince to flash past, and then darted after him. But the pony became entangled in the undergrowth and went down. Prince Garen was pitched over his mount's head to the ground.
Hurry! Get back in the saddle! Hurry!
The boy leapt back to his feet and grabbed at the dangling reins as the horse struggled to its knees. He was back in the saddle even before the animal had regained its legs.
Ride! Ride!
The hermit glanced down and saw hands reaching out for him. He slashed down with the reins.
Yeah!
Derwin spurred his mount after the fleeing prince, but felt his arm caught and held. The horse jerked away, and Derwin was hauled from the saddle. He landed on his back at the edge of the trail. There was a flash in the shadows. Derwin squirmed and rolled to his knees, and felt a sharp sting in his side. Derwin half turned and threw himself backwards toward the trail, and through clenched teeth, saw the glancing light arc toward him. This blow caught him low in the back. Derwin put his hand to his side and felt the warm wetness seeping through his clothes. When he brought his hand away, he saw it dripping red in the dimness of the forest. He tried to raise himself, but fell back, his legs numb and unfeeling.
Derwin, there he is!
Help!
Get him!
Derwin!
Derwin's mind raced. He had been struck down by an unseen sword. Instead of finishing him, the attackers had gone after Prince Garen. He must alert Tully. But how? The effort brought a flash of white-hot pain to his side. His spittle was flecked with blood.
The wound is bad. But no matter.
Derwin lay back. Tully must be summoned. The holy hermit of Pelgrim Forest closed his eyes and began to pray.
God, must I hear your servant in his time of need? Guide Tully here to help us, to save us. Bring him quickly, before it is too late. Keep the prince safe, I pray. Keep him safe.
dark mist rolled over him, engulfing him, and slowly his lips stopped moving. He lay back in the soft, mossy turf of the forest pathway, an ugly red stain spreading slowly beneath him. Quentin had reached the edge of Pelgrin and started back across the plain when he hesitated. He stopped rock still. The air was calm and warm. Light breezes wafted idly, lifting the leaves and blades of grass around him. To Quentin, it was as if the heavens had dimmed for an instant, as if a cloud had passed before the sun, blotting out its face for a brief moment. Then, all was as before, except the king's senses pricked and tingled to an unknown danger. At once he turned Blazer back into the forest, sending his thoughts ahead to sift the wind for direction. He struck along a southerly path, sensing that was the direction he needed to take. The boles of trees, bands of light and shadow blurred as Quentin flew along this dim corridor of Pelgrin. His heart thumped in his chest, and he urged Blazer onward ever faster, choosing his course on instinct alone. He reached a small clearing. A bundle lay ahead in the trail.
A body?
Quentin slid from the saddle and hurried forward. He knelt down and rolled the body into his arms.
Derwin!
The hermit's face had gone gray as ashes. His eyelids flickered, and he focused cloudy eyes on his friend.
Oh, Quentin.
What has happened? Who has done this to you?
The prince. Your son. They have taken him.
Who? Here, let me help you.
No. Leave me. Find your son. They went through there.
How many?
Three or four. I did not see them clearly. Maybe more. Easy.
We will find them. Rest now.
Yes. I will rest.
The hermit's eyes looked deeply into Quentin's.
We have traveled far together, eh?
Yes, and we have many roads yet to ride.
You will ride them alone, I think. But I'm content. I am not afraid to die.
You are not dying. You will survive. Help is coming.
I fear it will come too late. Do not blame Toli. It is not his fault.
I do not understand.
Be strong, Quentin. Remember, you are the king. You must lead your kingdom. This will be your sorest test. Your darkest day.
No! You will never die!
So it is. The spirit never dies. Never. We will meet again, fair friend. I will wait for you. No pain. No fear.
Do not leave me!
A slight tremor passed through the hermit's body, and then he lay still. Derwin was dead.
Fools! Imbeciles! What have you done?
Nimrud whirled around the circle, thrusting a crooked finger into the grim faces before him.
You will pay for this with your lives.
We only did as you told us. How are we to know he would leave the prince? They were together.
Silence! Let me think.
Nimrud stopped to glare down at Prince Garen, who stared back defiantly.
I send you out to strike down a man, and you bring me a boy?
He's the prince, I say.
Is this true? What is your name?
Garen. Who are you?
You impudent cub!
My father will deal with you. Let me go.
No. Here is an opportunity I can turn to an advantage. Oh, Yes, indeed. Bring him!
They started off on foot, threading deeper into the forest. Two big men shoved the prince forward. When he fell on hands and knees, they hauled him up by his collar and shoved him forward again. Another guard seized Tarki's reins and led the animal away.
You two, stay well to the rear of us. If anyone comes after them, put them off the trail. Do you hear?
The two men looked worriedly at one another, but nodded and dropped behind. Soon, Nimrud, the prince, and the others were lost in the dense growth of forest. The two guards watched their comrades disappear.
I do not like this foul business. Not a whit, by Ariel. We are guards of the temple, but he has made us highwaymen and kidnappers.
I did not hear your voice oppose him. We are in it now and have no choice but to see it through.
Aye, but where is it going to lead in the end? This is what I want to know. There is death here, mark my words. Death! This will be the undoing of the temple.
Silence! There is enough to worry about as it is. If we are to get out of this with our skins, we'll need to keep sharp and stop mewling like sick cats.
He has taken the prince by Ariel.
Shut up! We are in this as deep as he. No sense in yammering on about it. Now come on, let's be about our business.
The two walked off in the direction the others had gone, listening nervously to the forest sounds, hoping against hope that no one would come after them. Toli entered the trail and proceeded to the clearing. Before he even saw the huddled forms upon the ground, he knew something was very wrong. His heart jerked within him, quickening to the terrible apprehension that overpowered him. Toli threw himself down from his horse and ran toward the place where Quentin held the body of Derwin in his arms.
My lord!
Oh! Quentin raised his head slowly. His face glistened with tears.
Derwin, he's dead. Toli, I...
Toli felt as if his heart had been cut in two. He sat back on his heels and raised his face to the sky, showing pale blue overhead through the trees.
Winnowek, bred Faro Iliana. Fale Sensi Esinawa.
The words were simple, and Quentin understood them.
Father of life, receive our brother. Grant him peace in your great home.
To the Jair people, who had no permanent home, roaming the northern forests as they did, Winnowek's great home to them meant eternal joy and safety and comfort and peace, which to the gentle Jair was the highest fulfillment. Quentin lowered the body of the hermit carefully to the ground and with Toli arranged the limbs. He brushed a strand of hair away from the broad face of the man he had loved and kissed the high forehead gently. When slowly he rose.
They will curse the day of their birth. I'm going after them.
No, let me! I am going. Ride to the castle, bring a beer for him, and take him back. I will join you there when I have found my son.
But you...
That is all. You will do as I say. When you have finished, bring a company of knights and come after me. For I have not yet returned.
What are you going to do, sire?
I am going to bring back the prince.
With that, Quentin turned away and strode to where Blazer waited patiently. Snatching up the reins, the king swung himself into the saddle and glanced back once more at the body of the hermit on the ground.
Goodbye, old friend.
What can be taking them so long? They should have returned long ago.
Esme, sitting next to the queen in the royal pavilion, craned her neck and gazed toward the forest.
I do not see anyone coming. But you know men and their hunting. I would not wonder but that they became caught up in the chase and have forgotten everything else.
You are right. I am certain that is what has happened.
Bria spoke the words, but in her heart, she was far from convinced. Bria turned her eyes once more to the costumed mummers performing before her. The bright disguises glittered in the sun. Bria tried to maintain a show of interest in the performance, but once and again her eyes stole back across the plain toward the forest, watching for the return of Quentin, Derwin, and the others. But she saw no sign of anyone, so at last forced herself to concentrate on the play.
Look! A rider!
The queen raised her eyes and looked where Esme was pointing. she could just make out the form of one rider approaching from across the plain.
Oh, only one. Something has happened.
We cannot be certain. Let us wait until we have heard what he has to say. Perhaps it is only a messenger on his way to tell us the king will be late, which we already know.
Who is it? Can you see?
No, not yet.
They waited. Tension grew taut as a bowstring. Queen Bria crumpled the front of her gown in her hands as the rider drew closer.
It is Toli. Yes, I see him now.
Bria stepped down from her chair.
Come, I cannot abide here another moment. Girls, stay here with Chloe. I will return in a moment.
I will look after them, milady.
The two women dashed onto the field. They met Toli at the edge of the festivities.
What is it?
Toli turned grave eyes on her. He did not look at Esme. Bria felt a thin blade of terror slide under her ribs.
The king. Not the king.
My lady, the king is well. Derwin is dead.
How?
They were set upon by kidnappers in the forest. He died protecting the prince.
And the prince? Is he safe?
Gone. The prince has been taken.
No!
Where is the king?
He was with Derwin when I found him. He has gone after the prince.
Toli glanced briefly at Esme, as if noticing her for the first time.
I am to fetch a bier and bring Derwin to the castle, then return with a complement of knights to follow the king.
We will see to the bier. You must go at once and assemble the knights as the king has ordered. Do not delay.
Toli hesitated. Those had not been the king's instructions. Bria came to herself.
Yes, I agree. You must not waste a moment. Go now.
She placed a hand on Toli's arm.
Please hurry.
I should have been there. I should have never left them alone.
No. There is no time. What is done is done.
Go. He will need you with him.
Very well. You will find Derwin in a glade along the southern trail. I will send someone to lead you.
Toli bowed his head, and then he was back in the saddle, racing once more for the forest, where he would find the knights he sought. For most were taking part in the hunt. Bria turned to her friend. She tried to speak, but no words would come. Esme put an arm around her shoulders.
Come. There is much to do. We have to work to occupy us while we wait. And we must pray the wait is not long.
Yes, we must pray for Quentin and Garen. They will need our prayers this day.
Toli reached Pelgrin and struck along the foremost trail leading into the heart of the forest. The hunt had moved deeply into the wood and scattered widely. He would have to keep a sharp eye for signs along the trail and listen for any sounds of nearby hunters. He came to a place where a small stream trickled among the great trunks of ancient oaks. Along the low banks, he saw the imprints of horses' hooves where several had stopped to drink before pressing on. Without a second thought, he leapt across the stream and into the forest after them. The hunter's horn was sounded from far off, but it gave Toli all the direction he needed. Alert to the minute signs of the hunter's passing, Toli followed the party unerringly through the thick woodsy tangle. Rib charged through the underbrush, his head down and ears laid back. The horse, so responsive to his master's subtlest commands, passed like a glimmering shade between trees and outstretched branches. Toli slapped Rib on the rump once more, and they jumped a fallen log, landing square in the center of a well-used path.
Ho there! Toli! Look here!
The others with Lord Galen looked up from their work. They were a party of four lords, Galen and Fawcett, Sir Hendrick and Sir Dareth, and they were gutting a boar they had just killed.
Lord Galen, good sirs!
The members of the party saw the steed's white-leathered flanks and shoulders and knew that Toli had come on an errand of some urgency.
My lord, what is it?
A look of concern clouded Lord Bossett's features.
The king's minister has been struck down and the prince kidnapped.
By the gods! How? When?
We were set upon by assassins in the wood not far from here only a short while ago. I went after them, but they doubled back and attacked the prince. Derwin fell protecting him.
The hermit? Dead? There? Gone?
Mount up at once and come with me. We ride to meet the king, who is pursuing them.
By Zor, these rogues will pay for this outrage. We are at your command, sir.
With that, the knights abandoned their kill, mounted their horses, and fell into line behind Toli, who led them toward the place where he had encountered the attackers. They made their way as quickly as they could, and at last reached the glade. It was quiet and cool in the shaded clearing. A number of tiny yellow butterflies flitted among the leaves, darting in and out of the falling beams of light that slanted in through the trees. The glade seemed enchanted, and no one dared break the spell of the place. Durwin still lay where they had left him. So still and peaceful, he might have merely dozed off for a nap. No one spoke at first, overcome with the strangeness of the scene before them. The hermit lay dead, and yet seemed in such perfect peace that those who looked upon him could but stare in awe. His presence was strong in the place. Each one felt it, as if he had touched them.
Someone should stay with him. I will.
No, Lord Bossett. He is safe here in the forest. Nothing can harm him now. Go back to the castle and lead the others here. The queen is bringing a bier. See that all is attended to.
As you say, my lord.
The king rode to the south.
Quentin combed a wide swath through the forest, working first this way for half a league or more, and then cutting back the other way. But for all his care and vigilance, he failed to uncover any sign of the fleeing assassins. Still he pushed on, bending ever southward, with a feeling that this was the direction the abductors had chosen, though he knew they might well have taken another. The forest was huge. To cover it all would take scores of men and many months of diligent searching. As he rode, Quentin fought down the growing sense of futility and desperation that swelled within him, building up inside like a vile black broth set to the fire. Then, quite without warning, Blazer stumbled on a short, steep bank of hill, and Quentin found himself on the well-used southern road that led to Hinsonby and then bent southwest along the coast. He sat still in the saddle for a moment, scanning the road both ways. When nothing out of the ordinary presented itself to his gaze, he turned once more southward and continued on. After riding a little way, he came to a dell where the road dipped to meet a stony-banked stream. Here he found his first clue, for in the dust of the road at the banks of the stream were a number of footprints, and the hoof prints of a horse. Whoever made those prints had emerged from the forest at this point, having followed the stream until it met the road. Across the stream, the tracks led off down the way. It was difficult to tell anything for certain from these prints, for there were others all along the road. These and all the rest were made by people on their way to the festival. At once his hope, so quickly born, died and shrank away. But not entirely. Of all the various tracks in the dust, only a few were leading southward. All the others pointed toward the north and Ascalon. Seizing this meager scrap of evidence, Quentin once again urged the sturdy Blazer onward. The steed flew over the wide road, and the king searched along its length for any trace of his son's passing.
Listen, someone comes.
Both temple guards stopped and peered back behind them on the road.
You get off the road. If they stop, draw a sword and be ready.
But
the guard's hands trembled as they touched the weapon concealed beneath his cloak at his side.
Quickly! I will stay here and try to put them astray.
Why were we chosen for this cursed task?
Do as I say! Hurry! They're almost upon us!
The frightened guard threw a dark look at his comrade, and then disappeared into the underbrush at the side of the road. In a moment, the first could see horse and rider approaching rapidly.
You there!
The nervous accomplice turned and stood blinking at Quentin, pretending to be unsure as to whether or not it was he who had been addressed. A shiver ran through the man as Quentin was recognized. Color drained from his face.
So, you know your king when you see him, do you?
I am at your service, sire.
How long have you been on this road?
Not long, I mean.
Where are you bound?
To Hinsonby, sire.
Are you alone?
Oh, yes, my lord.
Have you seen anyone along the way?
Yes, I did. Only a short while ago it was. Back there by the stream, a group of travelers. Merchants, I think.
How many?
Five or six, maybe, not more. They were bound for Ascalon, I would warrant.
Quentin turned in the saddle and looked behind him. No, the footprints had pointed the other way. Then he saw the tracks leading away from the road. He turned back to the man, just in time to see him glance to the side and then quickly back.
Merchants, you said?
Sire, I believe they were.
And are you a merchant too?
I am a pilgrim, sire.
They were going to Ascalon, you say? Was there a boy with them? A boy on horseback?
The supposed pilgrim opened his mouth, but the words stuck in his tongue.
Answer quickly, friend. I find your manner most peculiar.
No, no, there was no boy with them. I saw none, at least.
Liar! In truth, I saw hoof prints in the water, and they continue this way.
The temple guard stared at the king sullenly and said nothing.
It is no small thing to lie to your king. I will give you one more chance. Where did they go?
I know not, sire, please! It is not!
Are you in league with them? Answer me!
Kenton whirled around as another man leapt from his hiding place, sword in hand. The second man lunged clumsily forward, his eyes showing terror. Quentin turned to see a blade appear in the first pilgrim's hand as well. Jalakir slid from the sheath. The long blade shone forth with cool brilliance from its fierce inner fire.
You! You killed Derwin! Murderers! Cowards!
Mercy! Mercy, I beg you!
I will show you mercy! The mercy you showed Derwin!
Mercy! Forgive yeah!
There is no mercy!
Quentin swiveled in the saddle to meet the second villain, who threw down his weapon and dove headlong into the brush, disappearing into the forest. The rage which had burned so hot in Quentin's veins left him as suddenly as it had flared. The king stared at the misshapen heap in the dust, then at the sword in his hand, and his heart froze in his chest. Jalakir's fiery blade now appeared as any ordinary metal, glimmering darkly in the fading light of late afternoon. The bright white flame of the Shining One had gone out. Silently, the women entered the glade, little more than a wide place in the trail. Esme swung down from her horse and Bria from hers. Bria walked slowly but steadily forward and knelt beside the body. Quietly, her tears began to fall. Esme approached and put an arm around the queen's shoulders.
Goodbye, fair friend.
Bria's outstretched fingers touched Derwin's folded hands. She then turned to Lord Bossett, who stood reverently nearby.
My mother is waiting. Let us take him back.
Bossett nodded to the driver of the wagon, and the two men lifted the body onto the waiting bier. When told of the tragedy, Alenia had said nothing at first, though her hands trembled.
Yes, you must go at once and bring him back. Take him to his apartments. We will prepare the body there. I will await your return, and while I wait, I shall pray for Prince Garen. Yes, but no less for Quentin and for the rest of us. Now go, and may the Most High be with you.
Esme had marveled at the Dowager's quiet strength. Her bearing calmed those around her, removing much of the sting of the bitter news. Esme recalled another dark day long ago now, the day Escobar had fallen in battle. Days after the king's funeral, Esme had asked the queen how she had been able to remain so strong, comforting all around her, yet seeming never to require comfort herself.
No, I am not strong.
They were sitting in the garden among the primroses. Derwin was there too. He had been the queen's constant companion during those troubled days.
Though it is true I am no stranger to grief, one never becomes a friend of sorrow. But Derwin here has shown me the way of hope. This hope I carry within me makes the burden lighter, and I find I am able to help others who have not such hope.
Then tell me, my lady, for I would know. How can I obtain this hope of yours? Where is it to be found?
Esme still remembered Alenia's words, and she remembered Derwin's too.
The hope you seek is born of belief in the Most High, the one true God of all. Seek him, and you will find him. He is ever reaching out to those who truly desire to know him.
What must I do? Where is his temple?
He is not like other gods. He has no temple and accepts no gifts of silver or gold or sacrifices of helpless creatures.
No?
No. He wants you. All of you. Your heart and spirit. He wants your love and worship. Everything. He will not settle for less.
This is a demanding god you serve, hermit.
Yes. He is, as you say, demanding. But the blessing he bestows on all who come near him are beyond all price. It is life he gives.
and nothing less.
Esme wondered at the words at the time. They sounded strange to her, and so unlike anything she had ever heard from any priest. She remembered how her heart had tugged within her as the hermit spoke.
Oh, but I was younger then. So young. Still, I wanted to believe what Derwin said was true. Is wanting to believe the same as believing? Yet, the time passed and I thought no more about it. Until now. Why now? Is it too late?
Esme came out of her reverie and found Bria's eyes upon her.
You are lost in thought?
They had reached the edge of the forest and were starting across the plain. Ascalon shone clearly in the light of the westering sun, throwing a great shadow toward them.
I was thinking of another sad time. Of Escavar's passing.
Often I have thought of that dark day. When Garen was born, how I wished he was there to see his grandson. It would have made him proud, I know. Yes, and no less proud to see his granddaughters. Oh, Esme, my son is taken from me. What am I going to do?
The king is searching for him, and Toli brings help. They will find him. They will bring him back safely.
He is so young. I am afraid they...
Do not think it. No one would dare harm the prince. No one. He will be safe. You would not be a true mother if you did not worry after your son, but Quentin will find him.
I am happy you are here, Esme. I will need a good friend in the days to come.
I am your friend always.
They rode the rest of the way to the castle in silence, each wrapped in her own thoughts, but feeling the warmth of the other's presence. Quentin blinked his eyes in amazement at the sword in his hand. One fell thrust, and the fire of the white lanthanal blade had been quenched. The awful significance of what had happened struck him like a thunderbolt, and he heard once more the words spoken at the anointing of the sword.
Never in malice, never in hate, never in evil shall this blade be raised, but in righteousness and justice forever shall it shine.
That was the promise of the Shining One. And Quentin, in one flash of anger and hate, had broken that vow. And in breaking it, the hand of the Most High was removed from him. In horror, he gazed at the Shining One, now lying in the dust, and at the crumpled body beside it. His stomach churned and heaved with revulsion. A spasm rocked him backward in the saddle.
No!
Then he turned blazer, sank his spurs deep into the horse's flanks, and fled down the road.
What is that?
Sir Galen raised his hand toward an object in the trail ahead. Toli looked up quickly. They were stopped at the stream, allowing their horses a quick drink before moving on. His eyes narrowed as he turned his gaze toward where the knight pointed. Toli's eagle-sharp vision recognized the shapeless form as vaguely human.
It is a body. Come!
Toli moved to the body and examined the head. It was nearly severed from the shoulders.
Someone wanted this one dead. To strike such a blow?
Who could have done it? There are no robbers abroad in this forest, surely.
Highwaymen would not have set upon such as this. See how he is dressed, Sir Dareth. Perhaps there was a falling out among thieves.
Or kidnappers. Yes, I would swear this one I dealt with in the forest earlier this day. Or another of their company.
But to strike him down in the road, why? It makes no sense. They must have known we would find him.
Toli made a quick search of the immediate area, sifting among the confused tracks and the dust for a clue as to what had happened. But he gleaned little for his efforts. There were far too many prints. It was impossible to tell how many men had passed or who among them had horses and who were afoot. Still, he counted tracks of at least two horses, and one rider had apparently been involved in the fight that had ended the kidnapper's life.
I believe the king might have passed this way.
You think this unfortunate attacked the king? It was ill-advised, though there must have been a reason.
Toli nodded thoughtfully and cast a glance skyward. The sun stretched long shadows across the road.
We must bury him quickly. We are already losing the light.
I want to follow the trail as long as possible.
When the corpse had been disposed of, the four set off again. Well, the sun was well down, and the first of the evening stars winked overhead. A chill seeped out of the wood as the sky deepened to twilight, but the riders pressed on, heedless of their fatigue or the hunger beginning to gnaw just in back of their belt buckles.